Thanks, Kamaljeet. So it's kind of a long title here. It's using models to improve in-season corn nitrogen fertilizer rates using the IRIS scheduler. That's actually the software where our nitrogen model is embedded. And then Map Window GIS plus MMP Tools, which is a GIS, free GIS tool that I use to create a lot of the things I'm going to display to you today. So just so you know, Purdue has had us commercialize this. Now everything, the nitrogen model is completely available for free to any individual user, but the calculation engines or the subroutines are being licensed to commercial entities so they can embed those into their kind of web-based platforms. So just as a matter of disclosure. Okay, so when it comes to nitrogen fertilizer recommendations, my personal belief that a priori nitrogen recommendations are of very little value in, for spring planted crops and rain-fed systems because you really have to be able to predict the weather. And our current N recommendations are really based on BMPs, you know, so you're side dressing or you're applying the nitrogen directly at planting. And that provides little to no guidance for a lot of producers. A lot of producers will fall apply anhydrous ammonia. They'll early spring pre-plant anhydrous ammonia. And our recommendations really don't account for those types of management scenarios. And so, therefore, we don't really provide them with an answer. The other big thing is that there's a 2-to-1 yield differential in almost any field if you look at yield monitor data. So that tells me it's not very likely that all areas in a field have the same fertilizer nitrogen requirement. So that makes me conclude that modeling approaches are needed, but, you know, let's be real here. There's a lot of other technologies that are just as valuable, drones, satellite imagery, tractor-mounted sensors. We still have a, you know, big need for field-based research studies, so there's no single magic bullet that's going to save us. So I want to show you in the Midwest kind of where we were, which is here with yield goal-based fertilizer nitrogen recommendations. And this is what we were using in the Midwest up until kind of the late 80s, early 90s. And, you know, basically when you got to about 11 metric tons of corn grain per hectare, that's a pretty darn good yield back in those days. And our fertilizer recommendations went anywhere from 100 to 225 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. So more recently, these Midwest states, most of them have gone to this maximum return to nitrogen concept for making fertilizer recommendations because there really isn't an association between yield and the optimum amount of nitrogen because that's driven so much by the weather. So with the MRTN, you're looking at a lot of crop response trials, and then you're coming up with an average nitrogen rate that will provide maximum yields. Well, so in effect, what we've done is we've gone from 100 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare up to 225 to 120 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare up to 225. I'm going to contend that we haven't really made any progress. We've just changed our approach. Here's what we really deal with. If you look at almost any combine monitor, you'll see big variations in yield. And in this particular field in 2008, this was a really good year for growing corn. You have higher yields here, and you have higher yields up in here. Okay, and there is more than a 2-to-1 difference in yield. Here's the same field in 2012. Much lower yields, but you still have this higher yielding area here and higher yielding areas up in here. Okay, these are soil-driven yields. And so if we look at the MRTN approach right now, about a third of the time we're correct, okay, with the MRTN approach. And if you look at the, if you combine the times that we're correct with the times that we're over-applying, we're correct at least two-thirds of the time. But there's still a third of the time where more nitrogen is needed. It's just that we're towards the top of the response curve, and so the yield penalty associated with that is not that great. Okay. So in addition to these variations in yield from one year, from one location to the next, even within a location from one year to the next, we have differences in optimum nitrogen rates. And that obviously is due to weather. Okay? But if we could account for losses or In this case, I just kind of grouped everything into soil, net soil and contribution. So in a high loss year, maybe you don't get a whole lot of nitrogen coming from the soil, but in a low loss year, you might get a lot of nitrogen coming from the soil. And if you factor in that along with kind of these losses of applied fertilizer, the total amount of nitrogen that's needed to maximize yield doesn't really change. Okay, so this is why I think we need models. And so I'm just going to give you an overview of this particular model that we have. We have a hydrologic submodel because the two things that drive nitrogen transformations and losses are moisture and temperature. And so what we did is we estimate soil moisture content from our irrigation scheduling software, which is really just based on the FAO paper 56, Irrigation and Water Management. Okay, we wanted to take a nice simple approach to using that. And then we have a soil temperature submodel. And basically all we do is we use a 7-day running average air temperature, 7-day lag, and we use that to estimate soil temperature. We haven't even accounted for time lags and damping with depth. And then if we use that as kind of the drivers of the model, and then basically we're just trying to model the nitrogen cycle. So this is a daily time step model. So the very first thing that the model does is it determines the amount of manure, urea, ammonium, or nitrogen that's been applied. And then we determine the amount of nitrogen that's going to mineralize from the soil, and this is with depth. We determine the amount of urea that's going to be volatilized and hydrolyzed. Then we determine the amount of ammonium nitrogen that's going to be converted to nitrate nitrogen. Then we start looking at crop uptake. So we look at the amount of nitrogen taken up by the crop. We look at the amount of nitrate nitrogen lost due to denitrification. And then we determine the amount of nitrate nitrogen lost through leaching. So it just kind of goes through this step, this process every single day. So as far as inputs go, if we have the location, then we can get soil texture with depth according to the NRCS Soil Data Mart. Now, if you have actual soil samples, then we'll pull the soil pH and organic matter from the surface soil, and then we'll use the NRCS Soil Data Mart for everything else. If we know the location, then we can get access to the weather, so all we really need is daily high and low air temperature and precipitation, and then you're going to have to enter an irrigation if you're irrigating. Then we need to know the fertilizer nitrogen source, if any has been applied, the placement and the timing of that nitrogen application, and then when did you plant the crop, and then what is your relative maturity of that corn crop. Okay. Humidity and wind speed are optional inputs. We find in the Midwest it doesn't make any difference, but when we've been doing some experiments actually in Arizona, humidity and wind speed does have a pretty significant effect. It's just so humid in the Midwest it doesn't matter that much. So here's what our model output looks like. So we start everything from October 1st, that's the beginning of our year, and this kind of yellowish line here is the cumulative amount of nitrogen that's mineralized from the soil organic matter. And so, you know, this is in Indiana in 2008, west central Indiana, so, you know, it was warm until it started freezing, then we get, you know, basically nothing going on in the winter, and then we start getting nitrogen mineralization in the spring. And then we look at ammonium and nitrate, and then here you can see where we've applied fertilizer. And then we also look at nitrate leaching, and also denitrification as our losses. And then finally we look at crop end uptake. So that's what we model, again, on a daily time step. Now, whenever you run the model, you just pick your day. So if you wanted to apply your, you know, here's a starter fertilizer application and here's the side dress application. So you would run the model the day before you wanted to side dress your nitrogen. It knows all of the weather and everything that's taken place up till this point in time. And then it looks at 10 years of past weather data to come up with what it thinks is going to happen during the rest of the growing season. And then it uses the average of that to predict what your optimum nitrogen rate would be. So we ran this model for some individual field trials that Bob Nielsen and Jim Camberato had been conducting at Purdue, and when I first ran it, I was just astounded. I was afraid of the model because the lowest R-square we got was about 0.97 for any individual crop response trial. And that's looking at the model simulated nitrogen uptake in kilograms per hectare versus corn grain yield in megagrams per hectare. So it's not a relative measure, it's an actual measure of yield. So after I did that, I got some more data from Bob and Jim, and I ran it for across Indiana, and we got an R-squared of 0.8, which is pretty darn good, between our predicted and uptake and measured corn grain yield. And then I contacted Charlie Wartman in Nebraska, and he sent me some data from Nebraska. Well, it's a lot more straight-line function in Nebraska due to the sandier soils and the irrigation that they apply, but you can see where everything bunches up. The model tops out for N uptake, and so does yield. Charlie also sent me some data on nitrate nitrogen that they took, you know, in the spring before they had applied any fertilizer, either to a depth of 1.2 meters or 0.9 meters in this case, so either 3 or 4 feet. This is the amount of measured soil nitrate, and this is the amount of modeled soil nitrate in that depth. And so if you look, if you're at 1.2 meters, a 1 part per million average difference would be 8 parts per million in this difference between the measured and predicted. So we were within 2 parts per million for every single thing that we did. So that was really encouraging. I think our nitrogen mineralization part of the model works pretty well. So this is kind of what eggheads at the university do. We just kind of do this kind of research and see how it compares to, you know, our crop response trials. But what is going to happen in the commercial sector in the use of these models? So I just kind of ran a couple scenarios, again, using the model. Now this is using it in the GIS stage. And so this is from Floyd County, Iowa. This is $4 corn and 50 cent nitrogen, if you convert that back to U.S. So the planting date was early May, and they applied 123 kilograms of hectare in this north field and 184 in the south field. So they used variable rate, but their variable rate caused them a yield penalty. Okay, so lots of variation, you know, low yielding area right in here, low yielding area through here. And if we compare that to what our model predicted for N uptake, the lighter blue is lower yielding. Okay, so not a perfect match, but, you know, you're limited by the soil type. But, you know, not a bad mimic of here's reality and here's modeled reality. Okay, so we predicted 188 kilograms per hectare in the north and 200 kilograms per hectare in the south. If you convert all this back to pounds per acre versus bushels per acre of yield, that we are pretty close to 1 pound of nitrogen gives us one bushel per acre of yield, and it was pretty consistent. Okay. So if we ask the model to predict what the optimum nitrogen rate would be on 410 when the nitrogen was applied as anhydrous ammonia, our model would have predicted the same rate, 183 kilograms versus 184, which was actually applied. But for this north field, where they only applied 123, we would have predicted 171 as the optimum nitrogen rate. So then I said, well, now what if we took this same situation, but instead of applying this nitrogen early pre-plant, we applied it at side dress time? Well, then the model predicted that the average N uptake would be much, much greater, and if we kind of stick with our pound of nitrogen increases a yield, you know, per bushel, 1 pound of nitrogen equals 1 bushel per acre, then basically we have a 35 to 40 bushel per acre increase in yield, and that's a huge profit change, probably $140 to $150 per acre at these N rates and prices. Now, if we asked the model to predict what that optimum N rate would be, then the model would have predicted a lower rate of nitrogen on the south field, 139 versus 184, because we've gone past where a lot of this nitrogen loss that occurs in the early spring happens. But we would have still applied more in the north field than the south field. So it was basically a wash. We were adding 18 kilograms per hectare more up here and 45 per kilograms per hectare less here, but this is a much bigger field, so it's a wash. So basically, we can use the model then to predict what's going to happen to the applied nitrogen, and then also kind of use that model to predict what the optimum nitrogen rate should be. Okay. Here's a situation in Kansas. This area here, this particular soil, if we look at the average of this field, the average was, you know, 6.6 megagrams per hectare, which is not very good, but this is Kansas. But in this field, this soil type here, the yield was more than twice as high as this field here. Now, this is a uniform rate of application. Well, if you look at what the model predicted for nitrogen mineralization, it predicted 109 kilograms per hectare on this soil because in the top 20 centimeters, there's, you know, 33 grams of organic matter per kilogram, and 20 to 35 centimeters, there's still 16 grams per kilogram. This soil up here is almost devoid of organic matter, only 7.5 grams. That's 0.75% organic matter in the top 15 centimeters, and 0.1% organic matter down through the rest. So huge difference in soil and mineralization, and that results in a huge difference in yield. Okay, so that's a couple, it's another way of kind of using the model to predict what's going to happen. So I also ran the model using kind of a regional crop yield estimation system. We said, what if you're a crop commodities broker, right? Can we start predicting what the yield is? So I just ran this for Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio. Okay, we started running the model on the 18th of June. We ran it every week. And so what we did is we predicted where corn was going to be grown based on the crop data layer that comes from USDA on a 30, and we ran this on every 30 square meters where we thought corn was going to grow, okay? And then we have to have some assumptions on nitrogen management and planting date, which we followed planting dates kind of roughly by NAS, okay? So I'm just walking you through here, and you can just see here's the 18th, and then you can just see a week later the color's changing. Okay, Illinois had really, really good yields this year, so did Indiana. Okay, this is the model's prediction on July 30th. The NAS data comes out on August 1st. Okay, so what we looked at is here's our prediction of yield for Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio, and here's the NAS prediction of yield. So we were at 12.9, NAS was at 12.6 in Illinois. In Indiana, we were 11.6, NAS is 11.7, 9.4 for us in Michigan, 9.5 for NAS, and then Ohio, we were over-predicting that. You know, we were 10.9, they were 10.2. But as a first approximation, I think this is pretty impressive. You know, so if we coupled that with maybe some other data sources, you know, there's Descartes Labs, there's TELUS Labs that are crunching huge amounts of data from satellite imagery to predict these yields. None of them know anything about agriculture, so marrying that, I think, would be a good idea. So, where do we go from here? I think, regardless of the model we're talking about, I just showed ours as an example, but there's a lot of models out there, and I'm not saying that one's better than the other, but I think we need to test all these models across different soil and climatic conditions to determine how predictive they really are. And we have to couple these models to imagery data, and there's a lot of disease, pest, and crop population models that are out there, so we can develop optimized prediction systems. It's not all about nitrogen. Okay. We like to think it is because we're working with nitrogen, but we want to come up with optimized prediction systems. We only have corn and wheat in our model, and so I think that we need to add more crops. And then my biggest thing is that we need to collaborate more, not less. Everybody seems to be protective of their data. Soil fertility people are the worst. You know, it's my data. I'm not going to give it to you because it's only my data, and you might misuse my data. Okay, I think that this is a big problem. Modelers don't want to share their data either because your model might outperform my model. So what? Right? What do we want? We want the best answer. So I think that collaboration is the key to progress here. So with that, I'm going to stop. So I got 20 minutes. So if there's any questions... Yeah. Yes.
Two questions. One is, how is the model performed for the year 2012?
Oh, how did the model perform?
Yeah.
Oh, it was awful.
Okay.
So, normally, I've run that model for Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Ohio. So generally speaking, we were within 1% of NAS prediction, 1.5% of what NAS predicted on August 1st. Okay, in 2012, we over-predicted the NAS yield by 46%. And that's because we have a very simple crop model. Okay, the nitrogen's being taken up by the plant early in the growing season, but that drought just hammered the crop, so there was no remobilization of nitrogen. A lot of the plants died, and the model didn't account for it. So again, it's like, yeah, total failure. And so we know what happened, so now we have to improve our crop model. But yeah. It's the application method and the timing. You're just throwing nitrate and ammonium into that system, right? And then whatever's happening with the weather, whatever's happening with crop nitrogen uptake, depending on when you make your application, and the soil that you're working with. So when we run this on a 10 square meter grid. I mean, you can run it on any scale you want. But yeah, when we do that, then we are not making any assumption about fertilizer nitrogen uptake efficiency. That's driven completely by the soil and the weather and the topography and how actively the crop has taken that nitrogen up to prevent it from being lost. Yes?
That was really good. I couldn't agree more with your last point on collaboration. We all need to share more. But one thing I'm really intrigued by is, so the farmer does the initial application, but then that second side dress application, you can vary the rate based on how well your crop's established, and like you said, looking forward to the projected weather based on the past. And that seems like a win-win. If it's a good year, the farmer's going to apply more, get a better yield. If it's a bad year, you're going to apply less and get less leakage in the environment. So it seems like a really good. So I guess my question is, what's the odds or the farmers actually using that system and adjusting their end rate? Are you pretty optimistic that this will be used?
Well, I mean, I don't think that anything that we develop in a university is going to be used by the farmer very much, simply because a farmer is not going to take all of their spatial data and put it into one of our free GIS tools and then do all of this from the desktop. That's why, kind of why we commercialized it. So what we have is our calculation engine that a bigger company can insert. They already have all of the farmer data, and then they can run the model that way. And so then I think, yeah, for sure, that this is something that'll work. But we have to validate these models. Like, I didn't do any calibration of that model at all, except I ran it the very first time, and I didn't like the way it mineralized nitrogen, because I was pulling everything out of the literature. Me, my brilliant grad student, did it. And nitrogen mineralization was one thing that didn't work. And so I came up with my own idea for nitrogen mineralization, which is very simple. Any third grader could have figured it out. And, then once I had that, I haven't touched the model since. And the reason is that I could show you examples where the model doesn't work very well at all. But is it the model itself that's bad, or is it the input data feeding the model? Because we're using all publicly available data sources. So, we're triangulating weather from ASOPs, airports. Now, if you were to buy that good gridded weather, that would probably give you a much better answer. But again, that's not for universities to do. That's how industry differentiates themselves. At least that's kind of what I think. Yeah. So the question was, did we compare, with our crop yield estimation system, did we compare it at the county scale? Yeah, I started graphing that because I'm trying to find outliers. And where I find outliers are where we have wet springs and the county is along a river. Okay? Because there's replant that occurred. So to me, all that, that's where satellite imagery becomes really, really important, because you can look at the planting progress from NAS, but then you're guessing where is the crop being planted, okay? And so we're using our best guess, but satellite imagery would be able to allow you to redefine that and probably get a lot closer. Again, as I say, a model by itself is not going to solve this problem. It's just a tool in the toolbox. Okay. All right, now we're about caught up on time. So, well, thank you very much.